A mentor has four primary characteristics for me. Number one is they have wisdom that they're willing to share. You know, a lot of people have insights, but they're caught up in their own whatever. It's not the right time for them, and they're just not willing to share. Second is they're willing to get to know you. So they'll invest some time with you if they have it, right? The third is that they love you, meaning that they will give you feedback for no other reason than your benefit. So there's no mixed motives. There's no hidden agenda. They're not trying to manipulate you with the truth they give you. They're just giving you the truth because they love you and they want it to make you better. And then the last piece is they share your values.
So you're a smart business committed to innovation, to service, and to modern marketing. And you're asking, what's next? Wondering how you can become even more innovative. My name is Jürgen Strauss from InnovaBiz, and this is the InnovaBuzz podcast, where we share all kinds of tips, advice, and interview guests on all things innovation and leadership in modern marketing. Hi, innovators. Yes, it's that time of week again, and it's so great to be back with you and another episode of the InnovaBuzz podcast. I hope you've had an awesome week so far. I'm really excited today to have on the podcast as my guest, Seth Bueckley. Seth is a serial entrepreneur, a business founder, an author, a podcaster, an executive coach, and currently serves as CEO of Cathedral Consulting. He shares his experience as a seasoned entrepreneur in his current role as a leader, a coach, and a mentor for others. He's also host of the Business Done Right podcast and author of the book Ambition, Leading with Gratitude. His mission is helping businesses grow the right way. Today's episode is brought to you by the Transformational Marketing Hub, where between now and January 15, we are offering a complimentary marketing health check for your business, complete with a report and action steps for your next 90 days. We'll assess the current health of your marketing, specific to your 90-day plan, and give you a report on the three key steps you can take to transform your marketing into an effective lead generation machine to serve the people you care about. Just visit innovabiz.co/MAS to get started. This complimentary offer is only available on a complimentary basis until the 15th of January, so get in quick. In our discussion today, Seth talked to me about why it is important to stop and appreciate what we have now. Satisfaction lives on the other side of gratitude. He pitched his idea of a free lunch Friday and focusing on people we already have a relationship with. Fascinating concept. And he talked to me about the four qualities of a good mentor. Without further ado, then, let's fly into the hive and get the buzz from Seth Bueckley. Hi, I'm your host, Jürgen Strauss from InnovaBiz, and I'm really excited to welcome to the InnovaBuzz podcast today, all the way from Roseburg, Oregon in the USA, Seth Bueckley. Seth is a serial entrepreneur. He's a business founder, an author, a podcaster, an executive coach, and currently serves as CEO of Cathedral Consulting. Welcome to the InnovaBuzz podcast, Seth. It's a privilege to have you as a guest.
Hey, thanks for inviting me, and I can't wait to spend some time with you today.
Great. Now, Aaron Walker, who was on episode 138 of the InnovaBuzz podcast, suggested we speak with Seth and get him on the podcast. So a big hello to Aaron.
Now, yes, Aaron is quite an influencer, and it's been a real joy to get to know him over the last several years. Grateful for that. Yeah,
and he was a lot of fun and huge value on the podcast episode 138. So big hello to Aaron. So Seth, you share your experience as a seasoned entrepreneur, both in your current role as a leader, coach, and mentor for others, but you also host the Business Done Right podcast, and you've authored the book called Ambition, Leading with Gratitude. You've said that your mission is helping businesses grow the right way, so I'm really looking forward to learning more about your leadership philosophies and leading with gratitude and serving your clients. But before we start talking about all things leadership and service inspiration, let's find out a bit more about you as a person, because I know you had an interesting childhood. It's something that most of us would probably find rather unusual.
As a young child, what did you want to do when you grew up?
You know, when I grew up, I just wanted to leave where I was, if I'm honest. I didn't really have a vision for what it would look like. I had a sneaky feeling that it would be important and meaningful, and meaning I kind of had this feeling that I would, quote unquote, be successful. But it was this intangible feeling that didn't have a lot of detail to it. I just had a feeling that I wouldn't be able to do that where I was.
Okay, so now you grew up in a commune, right? And when you left that, was that you, did you drive that or was that your whole family?
Yeah, it was really, I was 17 years old. And so I definitely was on board with the decision at that point. But my parents had kind of come out of something that happened in the United States in the 60s, this hippie movement, and had found a sense of purpose, I guess, in a commune in the woods in a rural town. And we live in a rural state, so we were in a small town in a smallish state. And, you know, at a certain point, it became less around helping each other and a little bit about keeping each other in check and controlling others. And we just had had enough. And so, you know, my dad launched from the commune into a business and kind of held a carrot out in front of me in some ways, Jürgen, and said, hey, would you like to go to college? Because you can if you want to. But he encouraged me actually to join him in the business instead. And, you know, he said, you know, you'll be a millionaire by the time you're 25. Mm. And what was interesting is I wasn't necessarily motivated by the money, but I was motivated by the challenge and this idea that you could do it differently. In other words, everybody was going one direction. And I'd even had people tell me, you know, if you want to be successful, you need to go to school. And, you know, I'm going to be mad at you if you don't go to school. But the idea of doing it differently and doing it with him was very powerful to me. And so I wanted that challenge of kind of going an alternative route.
Yeah. And you talk in the book about starting from the bottom in your father's business and also about how he mentored you all the way, which was really important for your own learning and ambition. So tell us a little bit about that and also how that formed your kind of the value you place on mentorship today. And you know, I know you're very keen to be a mentor to the next generation and give back.
Sure. Well, it's interesting that you know you bring up this idea of mentoring. I heard a quote today. I was listening to a book on Audible, and it was that there really is no such thing as a self-made man. And the more I've lived, the more I've come to believe that everybody that has some measure of success or influence even gets that success or influence because others had taken an interest in them and helped them along the way. And so I was very fortunate. And so when people sometimes will be impressed, and I try not to brag about the fact I skipped college. In fact, for many years, it was kind of this thing I had a little bit of a stigma because everybody around me had gone to college. And so I didn't talk about it much. And over time, I've come to realize, hey, it's a different path and it's okay. And I don't brag about it like I was able to, you know, have these achievements without going to college. But instead I focus people on the fact that the only way I was able to do that is I was given opportunities and I had intentional mentors who put me in positions where I could stretch and I could grow and they would give me candid feedback. And I knew that they loved me. And so it was a safe environment to kind of grow in my leadership skills. And so it would be very inappropriate for me to say, oh, I'm self-made or I could do all this, because the reality is, you know, it was through intentional mentors that I was able to do whatever I've done. And also just the idea of somebody speaking promise and hope and confidence, because even though, you know, I get to do a lot of things, I still wrestle with self-doubt and these negative, you know, identity things that have to be overcome. And it's usually a mentor or somebody around you who kind of calls you to that higher level and that best self.
Yeah, that's a really good point, because it's funny that we think that we're the only ones that have that voice in our head that's kind of beating ourselves up over things that we've done that we could have done better. But it actually, everybody has that voice, right?
Yeah, if they're honest, I think so. And I think that, you know, as we learn to to be a little bit more open about it. We've developed trust enough that we can talk about it. You know, then we can deal with it and hopefully kind of right size our actions. Many times we either aim too high or too low. I view business as a blank canvas that we are on. And as individuals, we get to create something that wasn't in existence. We get to create it into existence. It adds value to people. And really learning that I liked the people. I like to sell. And finding that energy. And I was given lots of opportunities to keep moving up the ladder, so to speak, because it was a family business. And, you know, I had somebody that gave me the opportunity to do that.
Hmm. Yeah, that's really valuable to have kind of that path and somebody looking after your development in that. But I really like the metaphor of business is a blank canvas and that you get to kind of create something from nothing effectively.
Yeah, you know, there are guidelines and there are rules. And I think that's part of what I do like to talk about with my my podcast, Business Done Right, is, you know, there are best practices and principles that we can avail ourselves of. And, you know, what happens many times for an entrepreneur is we tell ourselves the story that we are so unique or that our business is so unique that other people won't understand it. But in my experience, only about 15% of any given business is truly unique. Unique to the personality, unique to the geography, unique to the product or the intellectual property. You know, there is a component that is often unique about a business, but the other 85% of it is essentially the science of business that many people before us have done a good job of documenting and making it approachable for us. What I believe, Jürgen, is that despite our feeling that we're unique and we're alone in our struggles, that there are best practices out there that we can avail ourselves of. And it's really fun for me in the consulting business and the coaching business to be able to bring those insights that I get to kind of curate from serving, you know, dozens of different businesses. I get to bring those insights back to that next generation of entrepreneurs or that next size of a company that hasn't quite broken through to the level where they would learn these things. And to be able to bring those kind of business science best practices to them is truly, you know, a joy. And you watch the light bulbs go off. And, you know, one of the things I think about often is so many entrepreneurs are so driven towards the next thing that we often don't realize that there are people just 10 steps behind us who are looking, you know, to learn from us if we'll just turn around and, you know, pay them some attention.
Hmm. All right. So in one or two sentences, what do you do today and why do you do it?
Well, I'm the CEO of Cathedral Consulting, and I do it because it's a platform to be able to help owner-operators build valuable businesses.
Hmm. That's really good. Very succinct. So in terms of, you mentioned about, you know, taking the next step in growth for businesses and that, you know, we all think that we're unique and have these struggles ourselves, but usually entrepreneurs are all struggling with certain things. And one of the things you talk about in your book, Ambition, and in some of the podcast episodes that I listen to is that entrepreneurs struggle to feel satisfaction and fulfillment sometimes. And there's a great analogy that I really liked, which is the dog chasing the car and then, you know, the image of what... There's no plan for when he catches the car and bites the tire. So what happens then? So, yeah, so tell us a little bit about your thoughts on why entrepreneurs struggle to feel that satisfaction and fulfillment, even if they are successful by external measures, let's say.
Sure. I think the biggest reason, actually two reasons that I often run into is number one, just really, really forward focused. They're thinking about that next challenge, that thing that's not quite right. And so our attention goes to building and pushing and kind of in your world, innovating, right? And so you live out there. And what happens is we don't stop to value and take a good accounting of and appreciate what we have now right here.
Mm.
And so we continue to make progress and we accumulate stuff and people and relationships, but often we don't stop to enjoy it because we live in that on the front edge, that bleeding edge of trying to, you know, make progress. So that's one big issue. The other is that we've fallen into this myth, and it's a myth that's promulgated through media. It's a myth that is I think it's a human nature thing, which is we believe that fulfillment is found and satisfaction is found through achievement.
Hmm.
So it's if I can just do that, it will make me feel this way. But my experience is teaching me that satisfaction doesn't live on the other side of achievement. It actually lives on the other side of gratitude. And so by being grateful, as in taking a good accounting of what we already have and where we've come from, now we start to say, all right, if I'm looking for satisfaction, it's not going to be found through achievement. And then it begins to shift our focus. And I think that's where we uncover other things where we really do find a sense of satisfaction, which is our identity becomes tied not to our achievements, but to who we are. We begin to think about issues of faith. And we also begin to think about issues of service, like service to others. And we start to realize, you know, the gifts that we've been given, the opportunities we've been given, they're ours, but we have a response. We have a responsibility to use those to help others. And then when we plug into that and we finally say, all right, my satisfaction is going to come through that as opposed to my own achievements, in my experience, that's when the light starts to come on.
Hmm. Yeah, there's a lot of great things to like about what you've just said. I mean, I'm particularly strong on the idea of serving others in the sense of business, because as a focus, and, you know, the basic concept of business is there's a need somewhere for a service or a product, and if you have what can fill that need, then there's a match. And focusing that on the service of that audience who have that need, I think, is really the key to kind of driving that business to success rather than focusing on the money. I really like the idea of, you know, stop and celebrate achievements rather than chase the next tire, if you like, using your analogy. In a mastermind group I'm involved in, our business coach who runs that starts off with, okay, what was awesome since the last meeting? And mm-hmm. You're not allowed to say anything negative. So it's really, you know, it's the same kind of concept. And I think that is so powerful to have that. And then you can feel grateful, because we often kind of, as soon as we've achieved something, if we're driven to achievement, as soon as we've achieved it, we kind of tick it off and forget about it and off to the next thing, as you said.
Well, I think there's something else too, Jürgen, which is we don't want to draw, we don't always want, you know, we can be egotists too, but we don't always want to draw attention to ourselves either, right? So we don't want to stop and celebrate it and make it about us. And so we kind of have this false humility, but
that's right. Yeah.
But after a certain point, we can kind of become embittered and tired just because it's just one thing after another. I like what John Maxwell teaches. He says, listen, you need to celebrate something good, you know, give yourself 24 hours and then get back to work. But the same thing is when something negative happens. You know, agonize over it, you know, cry a tear if you have to, but then get back after it. And sometimes I find that people that are really driven aren't particularly reflective, and just because we're focused on activity. And then the other side of it is when we do get those feelings, particularly negative feelings that we got to process, disappointment is something I've really had to wrestle with, because I have this, I'm a little bit visionary. And so I see things and I'm like, this is how it's going to go. And then two things happen. It either happens and it doesn't give me the emotional reward I expected, or it doesn't happen. And now I'm just profoundly disappointed. And so learning how to process that in a healthy way, as opposed to just working harder or stuffing it down, is actually something that I don't think a lot of people talk about it. It's kind of this identity issue, which is, hey, you know, it's okay to be a business person and to identify as an entrepreneur, but that's not your total identity. And many times that we fall into that trap.
Yeah. So how do you deal with disappointment then?
Well, one thing I do is I talk about it now. There's a couple ways. There's the lead indicator. You know, there's how do I preempt it? One of them is I talk to people about my expectations earlier. And so sometimes they can help me ratchet down my expectations of something, or at least right size them, you know? So as I like to start new projects, and so often I have so many things going that now I can't get them all done the way I want to. And so then I get disappointed, and just being able to talk through that is huge for me. And then being able to acknowledge, I've been married, as of this weekend, for 28 years. So I married my high school sweetheart. And
congratulations.
Thank you. It says a lot more about her patience than my value. But just learning just to be honest with her. This is how I'm feeling, because this is really painful or hurtful, and having a great wife in the middle of business adventures has been an unfair advantage,
Yeah. Yeah, well, I had an interesting, I had a disappointing experience on the weekend. It was of my own doing in some ways. Mm-hmm. So I felt an intense sense of disappointment, but it was a disappointment in myself as well. And that really got me down for a day or so, and I beat myself up a little bit. And I've been married for 38 years, so I did have a chat to my wife about it the next day, and that certainly helped. It was, as you say, to be able to talk about it. And, I obviously talking to your life partner is quite a bit easier than sharing it with somebody else. But talking about the disappointment certainly helped. And in hindsight now, I look back on that and I say, well, there were some lessons in that. So it's actually whatever happened was the right thing to happen. And I've got some lessons there that I can take away.
Yeah, it's amazing what happens when we talk. You mentioned mastermind, and that's one of the values that I find in having a mastermind group is, a safe place where you can just be transparent about, what's going on. And, we go into those meetings when we've got something to unload, feeling apprehensive, and you leave the meeting feeling like there's the weight of the world is off of your shoulders and there's a spring in your step. And so it's really something that I would encourage people to take advantage of. And, that peer mentoring, it's somebody who's on the same path as you and kind of in that same strata, whether it's strata as a business owner because you're a business owner, or geographic strata or role of, whatever you're in, it's a huge deal.
Mm. Now, you mentioned earlier about that, most entrepreneurs that are really driven and chasing achievement are constantly looking forward, and they forget to look back where, often there are people just a few steps behind them that are looking for their assistance or looking up to them as potential mentors. So tell us a little bit more about how, looking back, having that 360-degree vision, and then, giving that service to people that you can be mentor to, can actually help your business and give you a sense of achievement and deliver some more satisfaction and fulfillment that you might be looking for.
Sure. I think at the human level, we all want to impact, our world. And I believe that we all want to leave a legacy too. And so one of the things I've thought about is the difference between these and those. And so what happens, particularly in the digital world of people who have a podcast or marketing or whatever, is we're trying to reach people on the other side of the interweb, I like to call it. But we don't actually know those people. We may never meet them. And it's not to say that we can't influence them in some ways. But sometimes we spend so much time thinking about those people out there that we're never going to meet, that we actually overlook the people we interact with, the people who we are in relationship with, the people we can actually touch and feel in our community, in our office, in our church, wherever we are, that we actually come in contact with. And so I call it, it's focusing on these instead of those. And so when we focus on these, it looks a lot like slowing down and, having lunches and asking people good questions and caring about what they're working on. And as a way to kind of make this stick for myself, because I talk about it, I remember one morning I'm just taking a shower and I'm like, I have to I need to do something to kind of make this vision a reality. And I crafted a program. I'll share it with your listeners here, Jürgen. Is I call it Free Lunch Friday.
Mm.
And so Free Lunch Friday was is essentially I get a free lunch. And now about now people are their jaws opening. How does he get a free lunch? And so this is what I do. I told people, and I think I used Facebook. I said, listen, I'm available for an hour on any Friday that I'm in town to sit down with you and talk about whatever topic you'd like to talk about. The rules are you need to reach out to my assistant and schedule a time. And then number two, you pick up the tab for lunch. And I called that Free Lunch Friday. And I took some time off this summer from it, but I'm getting back in the game. And it started to spread. So I have friends that are doing this in Minneapolis. Somebody was doing it else, I think, in Belgium. And so this Free Lunch Friday, I think, can be a real thing because it's basically making ourselves available to those around us who wouldn't normally come to us unless we invited them. So it's inviting them. The lunch thing is kind of fun and kind of funny, but it also gives them a little bit of skin in the game because one of the things that people don't want to do is they don't want to take your time for free. They feel like they're imposing on you.
Hmm.
So if you give them something small that they can contribute, like picking up the tab for your $7 taco, you know, then it's kind of, there's a little bit of equity in the relationship and they actually feel like it's a little bit of a peer thing. And so that's one example of focusing on the people around me that look to my experience and think that I can help them somehow. Now, of course, I have those people in my life, but what happens to us is I'm so, you know, spending too much time thinking about how I'm going to build those relationships for my mentor that I forget to be the mentor that I wish I had, right? I need to be that mentor looking backwards at people that are just a few steps behind me.
Hmm. Yeah. I like the Free Lunch Friday idea. That's really great. And, you know, it reminds me a little bit, I always get annoyed when companies and, you know, the telecommunications company, and I know you've got a telecommunications background, but the consumer telecommunication companies are very guilty of this, but there's lots of companies that do this. They basically have special offers that are only for new customers and they kind of ignore their existing customers in terms of delivering special offers to them. And that always annoys me. It's kind of the same thing, isn't it? Just sort of focusing on the new business and the people out there and ignoring the people you already have a relationship with and that might be looking for some more help or whatever it is.
Yeah. And if I'm honest and I'm trying to be, I'm a little bit like say the kind of that visionary. I like that frontier, that plowing new ground. And, it's tiring. It's a lot of effort. And there's a lot to be said as I get a little bit older, just to peel it back a little and say, focus on what you have, take good care of those. When was the last time you reached out to that person? Do a better job nurturing those friendships. You know, friendships are hard to come by. You know, we get lots of acquaintances. But, you know, cherishing those friendships, maybe I'm just waxing nostalgic as I'm getting yeah. up in my 40s, but it's getting more meaningful to me.
Hmm. Yeah, I think, you know, you talk about leading with gratitude and that, you know, satisfaction is on the other side of gratitude. I think that's an important part of gratitude. Now, you mentioned and you talked quite a bit about this. I really like the saying, be the mentor you wish you had. So explain that to us a little bit more because you just mentioned that a few sentences ago again.
Yeah. So actually, Aaron Walker and I are working on a book around this topic, but it's essentially it starts with, you know, defining what is a mentor. And I look at mentoring as a mentor has four primary characteristics. For me, number one is they have wisdom that they're willing to share. You know, a lot of people have insights, but they're caught up in their own whatever. It's not the right time for them, and they're just not willing to share. Second is they're willing to get to know you, so they'll invest some time with you if they have it, right? The third is that they love you, meaning that they will give you feedback for no other reason than your benefit. So there's no mixed motives. There's no hidden agenda. They're not trying to manipulate you with the truth they give you. They're just giving you the truth because they love you and they want it to make you better. And then the last piece is they share your values. Because there's, You know, and that's an interesting question because they could be religious values, but they don't have to be. You know, there are certain people who play by the, you know, if it's legal, it's fair game. And there's other people who say, wait, there's a certain code of morals or ethics that are different than that. There's some people who believe, you know, an open marriage, and if it feels good, do it. And other people believe that, you know, that marriage is, you know, sacred before God. And so the point of that is there are different value systems, and sometimes we can take advice from people. Maybe they know us, maybe they even love us, but they don't share our values. Mm-hmm. And we can end up off track. And so by wrestling with that identity of, all right, what's a good mentor look like? And I use that test, that four-part test. Now I have to turn around once I have thought it through and said, okay, that's what a mentor looks like. Now I have to own really my obligation to be that, to make myself available for others to be that kind of mentor to them. Because we all have that desire for that sage person who's got the wisdom, who's willing to know us, love us, and share our values. So once we know that's true about ourselves wanting that, we don't have to look very far to see that other people want that from us. And I think that's healthy. I think being a mentor probably makes us better at finding mentors because we're experienced in the art of giving and taking from both sides of that transaction.
Hmm. That's an interesting point that being a mentor helps us find more mentors. And I guess it's part of that is because you've had that definition, or you've thought about that definition of what makes a good mentor.
Yeah. And also, you know, the dance of what is a mentor? Should you call somebody your mentor? Do you, before, as you're getting to know them, do you say, hey, will you mentor me? Those are all things that can get kind of weird or difficult for people. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I've tended to say, you know, just build a real relationship with somebody who is further down a path that you want to be on, who also passes those tests, right? And so that's where the wisdom that they're willing to share is kind of that first cut, because we wouldn't look to them as a potential mentor unless they had something that we wanted to emulate.
Yeah, that's a great point. And you also talked about, you know, the desire that we probably all have to have an impact in our world. And that comes back to what I was talking about earlier in terms of service. And I know that you're very strong on being focused on serving others as a leadership model. So tell us a little bit, particularly around what you do at Cathedral Consulting, because I know you talk about pillars of excellence there. How does that work?
Well, I think the first thing that somebody who's kind of in the seat as a business leader is looking for out of a consulting firm is a trusted advisor. So somebody that they can be honest with, somebody that's going to not just try to expand their scope of work, but is actually going to give them, you know, insights that they can put to work. And so one of the things we like to say is it has to be affordable and implementable and lead to near-term results. And so that's kind of our definition of consulting, is it's affordable and it's implementable and it leads to near-term results. And I won't spend too long on this, but affordable because not every company has the bankroll to purchase every solution, right? You got to size it for them, and you have to help them think through what they can really find that's going to fit for their situation and that they can truly implement, because giving them a best practice for a company with more resources or more scale or more time actually just frustrates them, you know? And so serving them in the way of being a trusted advisor who doesn't just throw answers at them, but takes the time to get to know where they're coming from and understand the nuances of their business enough to say, all right, based on what we know about your business, these are the kinds of things that you could choose from. And out of A, B, and C, we recommend C for these reasons. And that's kind of an ethos inside of Cathedral of how we try to approach the, you know, doing consulting projects for our clients. But, you know, the other side of it is you really want to love them. You want to be giving them advice that's good for them. And, you know, so some of the ways that we try to do that is, for instance, when we go to sell a company, we will often not charge a success fee, but we'll just basically say, this is how much it's going to cost. You know, these are the five phases. And if in phase three, you decide that you're going to go a different direction because the market's telling you something you're not ready to hear, or you just want to wait, you know, we're not going to be upset and we're not going to charge you a breakup fee. We hope that we can continue working with you. And so those are some of the practical examples of trying to put ourselves in a position to serve that business owner who's sitting in the seat wrestling with things and feeling like they're all alone.
Hmm.
You know, and we really do think the value of businesses themselves. That, you know, the phrase that our company was started around was, in God's world, business done right is a blessing. And it's this idea that business is important, you know, from a faith perspective, and in even from a how all the world works together. And, you know, really cherishing that and honoring that, and therefore taking it really seriously, that it's really a privilege to be able to consult and coach, you know, business owners.
Hmm. Yeah, and I think that's a really good approach, and it comes back to that fundamental service mindset. You know, my business coach talks about a servant's heart, having, you know, that doing what's good for the customer, doing what's right for the customer, not being focused primarily on what's in it for you. So I think that, you know, all of that speaks to that, and that's a really good model. So you mentioned...
Yeah, it's easy to say. To say. It's a little harder to do when you're faced with certain decisions, remembering, you know, to put the client first and trust that it's going to work out for you and yours on the backside. I mean, that's really what it comes down to, is you got to trust.
Yeah. And there is a bit of a balance. There is a bit of a balance there, isn't there? But I think, you know, you mentioned earlier about matching a mentor with your values and those four qualities you spoke about. I think that can apply to a client as well, isn't it? If there's a mismatch in values or other mismatch, perhaps, then that's where there's going to be friction and it may not work out the best. And one of the things that I believe in terms of serving clients best is, I'm quite honest if I come across somebody and I say, well, you know, for whatever reason, I don't think we're a good match. I don't think I can help you best, or I don't think we share values or whatever. I think somebody else is better placed to serve you. So that, you know, that's part of my ethos in terms of business. So it's, you know, it's what you said earlier about the mentor also matching the client to the business.
Yeah, life is short. If we're grinding the gears and it's not feeling right and not comfortable, you know, it takes a certain amount of courage just to call it and say, hey, listen, this probably isn't working, and let's move on before we spin our wheels and frustrate each other more than we already have. You
know? Yeah. All right. So you mentioned that you're working on a book about mentoring with Aaron Walker. What else is on the horizon for you?
Well, it's interesting that we talked a bit about masterminds. So one of the things that I discovered when I purchased Cathedral a couple years ago was that we have some masterminds that don't call themselves masterminds. They're actually study groups is what they've referred to themselves as. Where we have CEOs from a specific industry, and in this case, they're from the automotive leasing industry, and they've been meeting together for 30 years in a small group, and they share their financials, and, you know, they talk about best practices, and then they get together three times a year, and so we call that our competitive edge program. And so what's been fun for me is I'm working towards rolling out a competitive edge program that serves the telecommunication industry, which is the industry that I come out of. And so we were involved in building towers and then making smartphones work inside of stadiums and subways and, you know, kind of indoor environment. And having come up close to seeing how some of those targeted business-oriented masterminds in our competitive edge program are working in one industry, I'm really excited about doing a beta and rolling that out into the telecom industry. And so, you know, I know your podcast is a lot about innovation, and it's funny, I've been thinking about the innovation process of how do you ideate and then you move to past the big idea to a low cost trial and test it out. And at what point you say, all right, now I'm firmly committed. There's no going back. Right. So I'm kind of on the front end of that process, getting ready to roll that out, hopefully in the first quarter of 2019.
Oh, okay. That sounds exciting. And I'm impressed that the group you mentioned has been doing it for 38 years. So obviously there's value in it to keep it going for that long.
Yeah, what's interesting is that they use it as almost a backstop or insurance policy for generational transitions. Hmm. Give you a forum to get the next generation of general manager into a business environment among peers. And that there's an established network of peers that will mentor that next generation up. And so the reason that it kind of ties back to the book is I believe that finding a mentor is important, being a mentor is important, but I also be mentoring, which is this middle ground where, where I'm in programs or I've been involved in different CEO forums in the past, they all kind of serve that same, it's walking with peers and mentor through best practice as you said.
Unfortunately, at this point of the interview, we did have some serious technical issues and Seth dropped out and it really wasn't usable. So I'll quickly summarize his answers to the first two questions of the buzz before moving back to Seth's own voice when we get to question three, which is where the audio came back on and most of the rest of the interview was actually very good. In terms of technical quality, of course, the content itself is excellent. Now, in answer to the question of the buzz round, the first one, what's the number one thing anyone needs to do to be more innovative? Seth said, be willing to listen. And he pointed out to listen and go deep inside yourself with that listening and challenge your own mindset. Really great advice there. In answer to the second question, what's the best thing you've done to develop new ideas? Seth said he focuses on the core and stimulates the edges. He believes in the concept of adjacency. So he pays attention to what happens in one arena and looks how that idea might be applied to another arena.
Yeah, and I there's a phrase, adjacency. I think for me, adjacency is where it happens most. Is that I'm seeing it in one arena and forum, and then as I'm looking at it working, all of a sudden you realize, wow, that would fit over here on this other side. And so it's just paying attention to what's working, and then asking yourself, where else can I apply it that nobody else is doing it?
Yeah, great advice. So do you have a favorite tool or system for improving your productivity and allowing you to come up with new innovations?
I use a weekly planner. I'm not very good at it. I will just tell you that I just keep after it. So I keep going back to the things that I don't feel like I'm great at. For me, it's pretty simple. Is I get up in the morning and I read. Usually Bible or literature similar. I'll exercise and then I'll get into my list of tasks and I continually looking at methods and models and tools and manuals for productivity. I'm definitely not a guru at productivity. I think I'm naturally, people think that I'm very, very productive, but I know that I'm just a rookie when it comes to real productivity. And so I just keep at it.
Hmm. Well, what I love about a weekly planner idea and whether you use it as a paper planner or some sort of online tool or PC tool is that it does get you to focus on what's important and kind of look out for the week. Okay, what do I need to have achieved by Friday or whenever your week ends? And really focusing on the core. So I'm doing that quite a bit now. And I'm also looking back over the last week when I start the new week, looking back and think, okay, what did I actually get done from that list and what's left over? And so that lets me then plan the next week, keeping in mind that, hey, I only got 80% done last week, so let's cut it back to 80%. And that forces me to focus again. So it forces you to focus on the important things.
Yeah, I've been through our mastermind that Aaron Walker runs, we've been looking at the 12-week year, and I've been enjoying that process. That's actually the book I was listening to this morning, I think, as I was exercising, just to keep it in front of me. And again, not that I'm an expert at it, I'm just a rookie, but I find immersing myself in those things just can't help but make me a bit more productive.
Hmm. All right. Well, we'll link to the 12-week year. I did have a kind of a glance at that a couple of times. It's on my reading list, but I haven't yet got to it. So I'll have to visit that one. Okay. What's the best way to keep a project or a client on track?
good communication. When you have that feeling that something is amiss, pick up the phone and deal with it early. I think early communication is the key.
Hmm. Great advice. Yeah. Communication is always a big one. I like the, if you get a feeling something's amiss,
yeah,
get on the phone and sort it out. Yeah.
Because your feeling is probably, it's a marker, it's a cue. And, we overlook those to our own peril many times. And that intuition is often, you know, I can't tell you how many times, you know, I've taken action and somebody said, you know, it's really interesting that you would call today. And then I just smile because I know that I was feeling it right. And I needed to make the call. So,
Yeah, great advice. So we should tell our intuition a lot more. All right. What's the number one thing anyone can do to differentiate themselves?
Quit worrying about others. I think, you know, not worry about what people think, you know, which is, I guess, another way of saying be yourself. But I think being yourself implies that you know what you stand for, and that you've thought about it to the point that it's not, you know, it's not a fad and you're not easily moved from side to side, but just, you know, be yourself, care less about people's perceptions of you. And that's not to say that you don't care what people, quote unquote, think. This is just to say that we spend a lot of time worrying about what we think people are thinking about us. And the truth is not many of them are thinking about us and we're just really caught up in our own.
That's fears. Right. Yeah. I think one of my recent guests said, we spend all this time worrying about what other people think of it and of us. And the truth is they are not even interested in thinking of us. But it's funny, isn't it? Because we have this tendency to worry about what others think of us, and yet, you know, you talked in the first question about being willing to listen and that often we ignore feedback. So there's kind of, you know, that's almost...
Dichotomy.
A dichotomy there, isn't it?
There is, yes.
All right. So this has been great, Seth. I really enjoyed this, and it's fascinating to learn from your experience and learn a little bit more about the book. Where can people reach out and say thank you for what you've shared with us today?
Well, they can get me at readambition.com. That's the main website. Also has my links to the podcast there. And it's been my pleasure to be with you, Jürgen. I appreciate what you do. I appreciate the invitation. And your questions were stimulating. And hopefully your listeners are going to find some nuggets that they can put to work right away.
I'm sure they will. So what's the couple of additional questions before we sign off? What's the number one piece of advice you'd give to any business owner who wants to be a leader in their field?
Be a thought leader. I mean, I believe you have to create content. You have to know how to show people what's important now. If you can stand in front of an audience and help them understand this is important now, then you're going to position as a thought leader and you can step into leadership in your field.
Great advice. I love that. I love that you said create content. It's a message that I keep telling all of my clients. All right. And then finally, who would you like me to interview on a future Innova Buzz podcast and why?
You know, I think my good friend Trevor Mock would be an outstanding guest because he is one of the most generous, outgoing, mentor-focused kind of guys I've met. He's got a nice SaaS company called Carrot.com that serves the real estate space, and he's just a fantastic leader, and he happens to be here in my hometown of Roseburg, Oregon, and I think he'd be a great guest for you, Jürgen.
Excellent. All right. Trevor, if you're listening to this, look out for an invitation from us to the Innova Buzz podcast, courtesy of Seth Boekley. So thanks again, Seth, for sharing your time and your insights with us so generously today. It's been a lot of fun. I wish you all the best for the future, and let's keep in touch.
Glad to do it, Jürgen. Anytime.
Thanks.
I hope you enjoyed that inspiring conversation with Seth, and like me, appreciate his generosity in sharing his experience with us. The key messages I took from Seth's interview were, firstly, often stop and appreciate what we have and have already achieved, and the idea of being the mentor you wish you had. Of course, there was so much more in this interview with Seth. I'd love to know what you took away from the episode. Leave a comment below the blog post, which can be found at innovabiz.co/Seth Buechly. That is SethBuechly, all lowercase, all one word, innovabiz.co/Seth Buechly. You'll also find contact information for getting in touch with Seth there, as well as links to his website and to the book Ambition, Leading with Gratitude. Seth suggested I interview Trevor Mauch of Investor Carrot on a future InnovaBuzz podcast. So Trevor, keep an eye on your inbox for an invitation from us to the InnovaBuzz podcast, courtesy of Seth Buechly. Remember to visit innovabiz.co/MAS to access the complimentary marketing health check for your business. The complimentary offer is only available until 15th of January 2019, so go to innovabiz.co/MAS now. Don't delay. Stay connected. Head on over to iTunes or Stitcher or Pocket Casts and subscribe to the InnovaBuzz podcast so you make sure you'll never miss another episode. We'd also love you to leave us a review, because what you think matters. Take some of the ideas you've heard today and apply them in your business. Any thoughts, ideas, suggestions, or questions, share them in the comments below the blog post. And remember, if you want to get better marketing results than you ever have, join our fantastic LinkedIn community at the Transformational Marketing Academy. All you have to do is go to innovabiz.co/TMAC. It's free to join. Hope to see you there soon. Until next time, I'm Jürgen Strauss from InnovaBiz. Remember to be awesome and keep innovating.